Welcome to the Life of an Entrepreneur. I'm Jan McCarthy. I don't know if my mic is sounding loud enough here, but I'm Jan McCarthy with Entrepreneurial Voice, and we are broadcasting live from Skid Row Studios. This is Real Radio on the internet, and we're here every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And we're here to talk about the life of an entrepreneur and what it's like, and we're talking to entrepreneurs so that they can share their business tips and what their journey has been. And if you have questions, we'd love to hear from you. The number is 1-800-893-9562. And you can call in and you can ask questions of myself or our distinguished guest. And so I am interviewing today Wade McElroy of Horse Thief Barbecue. And welcome, Wade.
Thanks for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here. So you have a barbecue restaurant here in downtown at the Grand Central Market, and it's really, really delicious and absolutely wonderful. But what was the journey that led you there?
Wow. Well, it took a while. I moved to L.A. 3 years ago, and I have
from
a restaurant
where?
from New York.
Okay.
But I'm originally from Austin, Texas. Born and raised in Austin, Texas, and went to college there, and I had two restaurants in Austin, Thunderbird Coffee, which are still there. My brother owns them. So, you know, I had a restaurant background, and I went to New York for a year and helped another college buddy get a business off the ground, an art gallery. And then I found myself in Los Angeles, and I loved it here, and I wanted to stay here and live here. And I, well, what do? I, you know, I'm a restaurant guy. So I just... I felt like there wasn't a barbecue presence here. You know, there was a few places, but I wanted to, you know, bring what I grew up with. And, you know, barbecue in Austin and Central Texas is something that's really celebrated and done well and sort of nostalgic. And, you know, you eat it as a kid, you eat it as an adult. You know, it's kind of everybody goes there, rich, poor, whatever. It's a real, like, community food. And I wanted to do that here. And so I started working on a business plan, and it took me a long time. I lived here for a year, and I worked on the business plan for, you know, 8 months and tried to get traction and get people to believe in it, friends and family and, you know, sort of business associates, because I was going to need financial help to get it off the ground. And yeah, you know, it's very tentative in the beginning. You feel like you're faking it until you make it. And then just started to get more and more traction. And then I convinced another college buddy named Russell Malixi to come on board. He and I were both business students at the University of Texas a while back. And he's got an entrepreneurial spirit also. And I was like, let's do this barbecue restaurant in Los Angeles. And he literally... he was passing through town, and he was living in Houston, and he moved back to LA. He was kind of looking for a project to get excited about and jump on board. And he was here a week later. And that's when we really started hitting the ground running. That was fall of 2012. And we started doing pop-ups, and we got real serious. We bought a commercial smoker, and we put it at a friend's house in Encino. And we were there, you know, 3 or 4 times a week smoking brisket, which takes a long time. It takes, you know, 15 hours sometimes. So you have to put it in, you drink a bunch of beers, you pass out, you wake up, and then you check on it. It takes a long time. And we just kept getting better at it. And we were really, you know, then we started looking for a location. And that was a whole process, finding a location in Los Angeles with, you know, the resources involved, the financial aspect of it, you know, the permitting. It's, you know, it's a maze.
It's almost enough to make you decide not to open a business,
it can be a little bit deterring, especially for, you know, a first timer. I mean, now that our feet are wet and we've got more momentum and more sort of muscle, I would be I'd be much more confident. But when you're first getting started, you hear a lot of horror stories about, you know, people running into problems as they try to open a restaurant or something, and, you know, doubling the budget. So we were real careful. We almost went into a place in Hollywood, and that didn't work out. And then almost Silver Lake, and that didn't work out. And then we found Grand Central Market, and it was just a great fit. You know, they have a really positive team there, and they're like kind of doing this revitalization thing, and we love the space, and financially it made a lot of sense. It was much easier to get into than some of these standalone things that we were looking at. And we signed our lease last May, and we opened July 4th, 2013, so it'll be a year.
Wow.
You know, this summer, and we've seen a lot of changes, and you know, so we've seen our business grow, and we're about to open on premises, you know, it's adjacent to our current business, a beer and wine bar. It's basically like an addendum to the existing business and open for
So if you didn't
dinner.
Have any time before, you really don't have any time now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's so fascinating and love that you came and came back to L.A. I assume maybe, I don't know what drew you back to L.A. from New York, but or drew you to here. But I like that you said you wrote a business plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I do talk to a lot of entrepreneurs. And obviously with what you're doing and trying to get funding, you really do need to have something very specific to share with, mm-hmm. with investors, because just because you have this great idea that you scribbled out on a napkin one night when you'd had a couple of beers,
yeah.
that doesn't necessarily make them want to invest in you. So I do talk to a lot of entrepreneurs who don't do a business plan at all and say, if I'd ever done that, I would have never opened the business. But you really bring to the point that you did need investors, and it was really important to figure out a really great location and to also put all of your ideas to paper. So
mm-hmm.
I love that you shared that just now. Now, did you grow up in the food business? I mean, you opened restaurants in Austin mm-hmm. before, but did you grow up in the food business?
I did. My dad was a restaurateur and sort of a small businessman. He had some other projects, but yeah, he did a few restaurants in the 70s in Austin that were still open when I was a kid, you know, in the 80s and the 90s. And he did some really kind of cool celebrated restaurants in Austin, a couple of them, you know.
So did you go?
French Cafe and.
So did you go to him for advice? Did you open the restaurants in Austin with your brother? Did you?
No, my dad was definitely a part of my brother and I's first restaurants. You know, he'd been out of the game for a while, so his advice was a little. Things had changed a lot. Like, it didn't take just a day to get a permit, like it was in the 70s.
Yeah. Know? Well, I think we've talked before, and I grew up in the restaurant business too. That's what my dad did. So, I mean, it was nothing for him to open up a little cafe or something. It was quite easy. So, or at least a lot easier than it is now.
Oh,
so,
my God, it's a lot different now.
So going down that road, that kind of gave you a bit of experience to
mm-hmm.
to even, it was nice that you had him to at least just talk about some of the things that.
He was a great resource in a lot of ways. You know, he just advice, encouragement. You know, he's a real smart guy, and talk things. You know, and we would talk about business all the time. You know, other people's businesses, his business, my business. So you know, I came from an entrepreneurial family. You know, for sure.
That's great. So when you came here and you were planning on opening up your restaurant, how did you come up with your name?
We had a different name that was sort of like, you know, if you were writing a script, it would be Untitled or a working title.
Yeah.
We didn't like that other name. It was just sort of bland. It was, we were going to call it Foundation Barbecue. And everyone was like, eh. You know, it was Snoozeville. I was with a friend in Joshua Tree, and we were just, it's hard. It's like naming a kid or something. You go through so many ideas and choices, and you're like, what's the right fit for this? Because it's your business, it's your baby, and, you know, hopefully it'll be in existence for a long time. You want to have the right name on it. And we were talking about Lonesome Dove, which is a book that won the Pulitzer in the 80s, written by Larry McMurtry, and a lot of it takes place in Texas. And there was a character in there named Kicking Horse, and he was an Indian horse thief. And we were just talking through that, and I said horse thief, and my friend was like, that's great. Let's, you know, you should call it Horse Thief. And so I ran it past, you know, some friends, and everyone either thought it was offensive or liked it. So I was like, that's a good sign.
Yeah, get them talking, right?
Yeah, it's punchy, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and easy to remember.
Yeah, easy to remember, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's important, too.
Now, coming to Grand Central Market, it's changed a lot in the last year, mm-hmm. and it's certainly the new hot spot to be. But a year ago, you were still kind of taking a chance, and even when you were thinking about that, I mean, you opened up a year ago almost, but mm-hmm. but you had that location already pegged before then. You were taking a chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's courageous. You know, what made you decide, what was your vision then when you saw it to say, I really think this is going to go? What were those?
Well, it wasn't like there was like an absentee landlord who was just sort of leaving this to, you know, chance. You know, the landlord, Adele Yellen, is a delightful woman, and she's very involved. And then she has a team that she put together. She's owned the property for years and years and years, but I think she's realized in the last few years that, you know, downtown is changing, and there was a great opportunity there to make it like this really exciting artisanal food hall. And so the we felt like there was, you know, it wasn't just us, you know, alone in the wilderness. It was like there was this really great team, you know, financially, and, you know, Kevin West and Joseph Schuldiner, creative directors, bringing in, these guys are like legit LA food people and cookbook authors, you know, so they were enticing like the foodie community, and we just felt like there was a great vision there, and it was definitely worth the risk, you know. And we haven't even been there a year, and we've already seen the sands shifting, so we're happy with the, we feel like it's,
yeah, like
it's gonna work.
Like you won the lottery. Yeah, this did turn out to be a really cool place.
Yes, yeah. We haven't won it yet, but I'm like, okay.
Well, breathe a sigh of relief, right? It's not going in the opposite direction.
This isn't Titanic.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to make it.
Exactly. Now, you didn't have too hard of a time convincing your friend. It sounds like he was up for an adventure and ready to go and everything. But were there naysayers that said, what are you doing? I mean, the restaurant industry is known to be one of the hardest industries to be successful at.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or did everybody just say, oh my God, you've got this barbecue that is so good?
You know, I don't think it was like, you're going to, you know, what are you out of your mind? Or, oh, you guys have, you know, I think people thought this is a solid, you know, this is solid. You guys are, you're good at what you do. And, you know, I think you've got a good thing to work with here, because, you know, you have the idea but then there's the daily battle every day of, you know, running the place really well. So no, there was not really any naysayers, but, you know, certain people certainly were not interested in investing whatsoever. so we put our energy in the people that we felt were.
So what do you think, because like I said, the restaurant business is not only hard, but it's pretty notorious for a lot of people opening up shop and closing, and you've been successful. And I recognize that, you know, we all still have a way to go with our businesses and letting it grow. But what do you think are the key components to your growth, your successful growth since you opened up in July?
Well,
and what a great day
to
open.
First of all, I've heard that about the restaurant business too, you know, the high failure rate, but tell me what the easy business is. I don't know. I haven't found that one yet.
I like that answer. Yeah.
This is what I am good at and know how to do. So I just keep coming back to it, and I have had a pretty good track record, but I think you have to be careful not to, you know, sign up for a situation, you know, where your overhead, your monthly expenses are just going to eat you alive before you have a chance to get some traction. You know, let's say you have, some ultra high rent and you don't really have the money in the bank to pay that if you're not, you know, doing the revenues that you want to do. So I've seen that happen a lot, where overhead just kind of tears people apart. And then I also feel like there's just a lot of mediocre concepts out there. The good ones usually stay in business, you know, if they have the right lease or the right, you know, ownership, the owners are, you know, in agreement. And luckily we have a really great team of people running it. And, you know, our investors are all, well, they're silent, but they're also, you know, they're our friends and family, and they're very supportive and smart people. So, you know, did I answer the question there?
Well, sort of. I mean, yeah, you did. You answered it like, from a
what are the threats to you? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, well, I'm I think you definitely answered it, but I have more questions about it. Like, mm-hmm. kind of what's your secret sauce? And not the recipe. I'm not asking for the recipe. But things like, and I want to go back and explore about the partnership and how you decided, mm-hmm. you know, like,
I mean, it's a young business, and we've had, you know, we had some scary months where we lost, you know, money, and we had, you know, we just had a record month last month. So the trajectory is very positive. You know, I think we'll, you know, just, it's going to be a great business. And, but, you know, it's like, it's not like you just take off and you rocket to the moon. I mean,
we
opened
it
and we've been very careful with the way strategic with the way we've managed it from day one. And, you know, it could have gone another direction, but it you know, it requires like constant energy and paying attention to what's working and what's not working. And when something isn't working, you know, sure as hell better do something about it, you know, because no one's going to fix it except for you.
Right, exactly. And there's certain elements, and this is true for any business, but with everything that you're saying, whether you're a restaurant or not, mm-hmm. you know, you really do have to pay attention. That is your overhead going to eat you up, and
yeah.
and you're not able to pay the rent, because are you able to accommodate and be able to get all of those customers in right mm-hmm. away? You know, if you're going to be paying that much money, you've obviously got to be able to pay the rent.
You know, we've made a lot of changes since we opened. We've changed our trays, we've changed, you know, like our recipes. I mean, not drastically, but we've calibrated them and we've fine-tuned things. And I think that's you know, the restaurant that we're running 7 months later is way more pro and refined than it was, you know, the first month. And I think that it's really important to just constant improvement.
And that's good for entrepreneurs to know. Yeah, to know that, you know, you go in with this plan and really it's just a plan. That doesn't mean that it can't be altered and it can't be adjusted based on what's happening and being in real time and in the moment and saying, oh, well, these trays don't work, or, you know, if we refine this recipe or... Yeah. But even the thought process that you had, you've got a very specific menu. Mm-hmm. I think you always have banana pudding on there, which is mm-hmm. amazing. Love it. And cornbread, which is yep. great. And of course your barbecue itself. But mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like you have a menu with 500 items. You have a limited menu. It's very specific. And, mm-hmm. and obviously there was a lot of thought there that made you decide these are the specific items that we're going to offer. And of course you can bring in specials or do things like that. But, mm-hmm. but these are the specific things that we'll always have on our menu. What made you decide to go with like the small menu, the limited menu versus, you know, that was obviously
like
purposeful.
Sprawling.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of things are just, you know, the size of the space. And then also mainly barbecue restaurants are known for doing a few things really well. They're not like the Cheesecake Factory.
Right, thankfully.
You know, that's what the Texas barbecue places that we've modeled ourselves after.
And that's what
do.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Did you model yourself after others that have been very successful?
Yeah, that's like the classic format. You know, you smoke 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 meats and you have a handful of sides and desserts and, you know, people know what they're coming to eat. It's narrow and deep, I guess, versus broad.
Yeah. You know? Now, are these your mother's recipes?
No, they're not. Russell and I developed everything ourselves.
Cool.
But we developed it because he and I have eaten at every single barbecue restaurant across Central Texas, all the famous ones, you know, Franklin's and, you know, Mueller's and all the places in Lockhart and City Market and Luling and Snow's. And, you know, we've had it all. And then we developed our recipes, trying to reach that bar, trying to get to that same level.
So did you have tastings to decide whether, you know, this is
yeah,
better,
we would, you know, cook and we would try different, you know, like qualities of meat and rubs, you know, we only use prime grade meat now because we it's like the best and we feel like you absolutely taste the difference. You know, we tried different rubs, different temperatures, different cooking lengths, you know, putting a water pan in the smoker or not putting a water pan in the smoker, injecting the meat, not injecting the meat, and just did rigorous experiments and would taste it until we felt like we found the best, like what combination of, you know, methods led to the best brisket. And then, you know, flew back to Texas a few times to taste the, you know, the OG places. And it's funny, as we got better, we'd go back and we'd be like, you know what? That one place actually isn't really that good that we used to think was so good. We're better than them, you know? So I think where we're at now, it's some of, I'd put it up against anything in you know, in Texas for sure. It's hard to say you're the, you know, we're at that top level now.
I mean, it's easy really to say you're the best. Yes, I say you are the best. You are the best. I think your barbecue is amazing. I love it. And I'm really excited that it's right downtown where I can have it as
thanks. We feel proud of that. You know, we really do. Yeah. We're really, especially 8 months in, our confidence is there now. And we really feel like we're serving some kick-ass barbecue. And we're downtown LA and we offer that to downtown. And, you know, that's pretty cool.
So I know you have plans for growth, and I'm curious as to whether this was always in the original plan or whether it came about once you got in the space and got comfortable with the space and said, oh, you know what, we could really move into this arena. Why don't you talk a little bit about what it is you're going to do?
Well, Russell and I, we love to fantasize about all kinds of stuff, like what the next move is going to be. Because, you know, at this point, in a year, like having a successful restaurant and a track record opens up a lot more doors than it does when you have nothing and just a little business plan. So I'm not sure what our next move is going to be. Maybe a different concept, but we would like to do maybe another Horse Thief on the West Side, or, you know, but it'd have to be a really great, singular, unique location, the same way that
Grand well, I'm talking Marcus. About the fact that you're going to be opening up a wine and
oh,
beer bar.
Yes, absolutely. In the next year, like hopefully by May 1st, our patio bar, which is adjacent to the existing restaurant, will be open, offering craft beer and a nice wine selection. And then we'll start extending our hours, hopefully this summer. And then ultimately, the restaurant should be open until 10, 11, 12 on the weekends, and maybe 9 or 10 during the week. But that's going to be a process in a few months off. We'll definitely be serving beer and wine, though, like within 6 weeks.
And was that part of the plan from the very beginning? That
yeah,
you were
we absolutely
that
wanted
up?
To do that, yeah. And we've been working with the market management for, they had already started the process when we came on board, and then we joined in, but we've been working on this alcohol permit for over a year, I think.
Now, just to explain, your barbecue place is, you walk up, mm-hmm. and so all the seating is outside. There's no indoor seating, so it's not inside the Grand Central Market. It's right outside of the Grand Central Market. Mm-hmm. Was that, when you were first thinking about opening up a barbecue place, did you think about, was that kind of your concept to always have it outside? What made you decide to put it out, choose that location versus an enclosed with a patio?
Yeah, yeah. The place that we looked at both in Hollywood and Silver Lake were sort of normal restaurant spaces. And then we saw that space. Well, those deals fell through on their own. But we just liked that patio, and we figured, you know, it would work, you know.
Well, it is California.
Yeah. We never really wanted to do table service because we found that space. We're like, this is a great fit. This will work perfectly for, you know, our format. You order at one window and you pick up at the next. Some places in Texas, you sort of go down a line and they, you know, cut meat and put it on your tray, which is interesting too, but it's always casual. It's never like, you know, a waiter and some places, but we like the sort of simple format.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. And it seems like it's worked out really, really well. But I didn't know if that was part of the plan originally or not.
No,
were you a little concerned?
The other spaces were different. But when we found that space, that's kind of what we had envisioned originally. So we were happy that we weren't having to turn into something that we weren't. Like, we had imagined it to be casual order pickup. And so that space was ideal. It really was.
That's perfect. Mm-hmm. So,
since this is a entrepreneurial, you know, show, maybe we could just about the business plan and, you know.
Yeah, I'd love for you to talk about that.
Yeah, okay, because that was a I felt important part of the process.
And I also want you to talk
really
about
confusing. Like, I feel like I help people now, like, write a business plan. I always give them a copy of mine because they're like, I want to write a business plan. And I mean, I got two books and I got this software that had like 50 business plans. And I got so confused. I knew I needed to make a business plan, but I didn't know exactly what that was. And, you know, you see these like charts and graphs and like all this information. And I would read through some of these and I felt really just bewildered.
And what did you study in school? Did you study business?
I studied business. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I should have an advantage in this department, but even still you're like, where do I start with this thing?
I agree. I think everybody feels that way. So I'm so glad you're bringing that up. And
it's just something I thought we'd talk about since I have this conversation with people all the time that want to, you know, they want to create a document or a business plan, or they already own a place and they want something sort of they can shop around to investors. And so I got I started on something and I would go over to Glendale to SCORE, which is part of the small business SBA. It's a social core of retired executives. And these old guys that have been executives, you know, for like Cargill International.
Exactly.
You know, helping me out. And they gave me some good advice. But as I wrote it, it just sort of took on a life of its own. And I think the best thing you can do is it's just a persuasive document. You're probably not going to give it to a bank, and they're not, you know, banks aren't investing in restaurants, at least.
They're investing in you. Well, they're not investing in restaurants. You're right.
Yeah. So no one's going to sit there and, you know, judge your spreadsheets. Like it's about presenting, a persuasive document that tells a story. And really the biggest benefit of writing it is for yourself. Not for the people you're going to give it to, because it just forces you to distill your idea, to, you know, turn it over again and again and edit it until it becomes really clear in your mind. And I think that's important, because the clearer it is in your mind, that will sort of manifest out in the real world, you know, with what happens with your conversations with other people, because you're trying to bring something, it's creative. You're trying to take something that's an idea and bring it into the real world. And so, you know, I wrote this business plan and the writing was good, and I explained the concept and why it was good, but just sort of the energy and the voice behind it became very persuasive and powerful. And I got a lot of compliments on it because I went through it a lot and I got a clear and clearer idea of what I was trying to do and why it was a good idea. So, I mean, it can just be as simple as like taking out a piece of paper and, you know, what is your idea? Like, explain it, sell it, tell me what it is. And I had, a lot of great pictures and stuff in the business plan. It was very visual, that conveyed the idea. You know, and the numbers, that's the easy part, you know, just doing, doing like your profit and loss, the pro forma. But the hard part is, or not the hard part, but the important part is the sort of the verbal thrust, the persuasive side. And it was a lot of fun. I'm really proud of it. And I share it with people, you know, now.
That's fantastic. And I agree. I mean, you have to really believe in this dream. And that's why I say people will invest in you. You know, they want to know that you have the determination and you have the fortitude and you have the problem-solving skills, because, you know, there are going to be problems that are going to come up, and then you're going to go, okay, I've got to fix this. How do I, what's the solution here?
Yeah.
That you're not just going to give up and give in and walk away from this. So ultimately, you've got to have
something tangible. You know, you could say, oh, I want to open a burger stand. Okay, cool. What does that mean?
Right.
Well, let me
give
you all these details
it?
That I thought through, and, you know, those are the tangible things that people can wrap their...
And what's going to keep you in the game when the going gets tough?
Yeah, why is it important? Why is it better? You know, why should anybody care?
Exactly. So why don't you answer those questions? Why are you better?
That's funny. We were just talking about that the other day. I think that, you know, objectively, I think our stuff tastes better than a lot of places, you know, not to sound arrogant, but. And that's because we have a very clear idea of what it should taste like, what good is. And then we're just exhaustive, you know, we're OCD freaks over there, and we go crazy if things aren't up to our standards. You know, so we we're constantly tasting all the food. And, you know, a restaurant is like a this entity that wants to sort of drift into entropy, you know? Like, all kinds of little things will start to go wrong and they'll grow. So you have to be there constantly, you know, course correcting.
Yes. And that's so a really good way to put it.
Because if you don't, if we just stopped, you know, being dickheads and, you know, just let everything slide, it would just
compound. And
yeah, it would just, you know, dissolve into mediocrity. So we're really strict, and we you know, about our processes, and our, you know, and like if we have somebody on the, you know, we've let somebody go because we, you know, didn't feel like they could keep the, you know, as tight of a grip as we want, you know, because everybody that works for us is like really dedicated and serious and takes it serious that we're trying to serve a good product, which means, you know, handling it, storing it, prepping it, cooking it, and then, you know, cutting the meat, and then as it's presented, you know, as it goes out. And we don't do it perfectly, but we try to, you know, we're always striving towards that. But we do make mistakes, but we really try, you know, to keep it as good as possible all the time. And I think that's what separates, and in a lot of fields, you know, what's good from what's sort of mediocre.
And those are really good points. So I think that some questions that a lot of entrepreneurs have too is, because you just jumped in. This isn't like a one-man show where you just jump in and you're able to do it. I mean, you jump in, you've got employees immediately. You have to, because mm-hmm. you can't obviously run this whole thing by yourself. And you came on with a partner. What were your thoughts? I mean, this was a friend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they say don't do business with friends and family.
I know, but who else do you know?
But yeah, who else do you know that you can trust and that you think is going to, that has qualities that you admire?
Yeah.
But that's still a big thing. So were there questions in your mind when you decided to be partners, and how did you let the ego go mm-hmm. and say, okay, this is what I'm really good at and this is what you're really good at, and divide those responsibilities? I mean, I know it's a lot like marriage.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've been married or not, but, you know, it's a lot like a marriage and really
it is.
Putting your ego aside to what's best for the business. But how did you bring that together, and how do you work out things when maybe you're not in agreement? Or,
well, you know, I think that's like the beauty of it, and then also can be the tragedy. Like, if both people are just so complacent and, you know, easygoing, then nothing really interesting happens. And if the partnership is too fiery, well, then it destroys itself. You know, like a band that puts out a great album, but then they can't get along, and, you know, like, or it can be like the Rolling Stones that just puts out album after album after album.
Right.
And Russell and I, we're lucky, and our partnership has definitely evolved since we started, you know, but we have friction. We'll definitely argue about things, but then neither of us ever sort of tear the partnership or burn any bridges. You know, we'll just sort of give each other space. But we definitely butt heads on stuff. And I found that friction, you know, benefits the business. It does, you know, because you kind of sort of have to fight and defend ideas, and usually only the best ideas are going to make it through that fire.
Like the cream rises to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it, you know, forces you to defend what your position. I mean, it's not like, and now we've really got it, like our partnership is like humming along, but, you know, we've definitely battled it out before. And he, you know, I got lucky. He's a great guy. I've known him for years, and we work well together, and we do sort of divide and conquer. I told him I was going to come do a radio thing. He hates to talk, like public speaking and stuff. So notice this chair is empty.
So did you sit down and say, okay, this is what you do and this is what I do? Or did you just say, we'll figure it out as we go?
You can talk about it, but it's only when you get into the field, when you kind of see what works in the field. And we certainly, before we opened, we had more time to, you know, be egotistic and argue about things. But then you're so exhausted when you're open that you're actually grateful that person's going to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a working partnership, and it's definitely evolved since we've been open. And there's certain things that he does well and I do well, and there's a lot of overlap. Or, you know, I like to get his opinion on things, even if I'm working on them, you know, let's just say the design aspect of things. I put a lot of energy into that. But I used to think, oh, that's, you know, my area. But now I like to get his input on stuff and vice versa. So you have to have respect, but it's still good to butt heads.
And I'm curious, too. I think it's interesting in the fact that how men do business and how women do business. Mm-hmm. And how women would set up their partnership and how men might set up that partnership, too. Mm-hmm. But before we get started on that, I do want to, for anyone who might be listening, please give us a call. The number is 1-800-893-9562. You can call in and ask myself or Wade a question, and we'll see if we can answer it or not. Do you feel that, and it might be hard to say because you don't necessarily know how women may mm-hmm. do it necessarily, but, you know, I think they tiptoe around a little bit more so than maybe men would in terms of not wanting to hurt anybody's feelings mm-hmm. or not try and be the leader in that respect. Is that something that...
Oh, I don't know if I have any sort of observations about that.
No. You just do what you do, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What's your proudest moment so far?
What has been our proudest moment? I think since January, you know, we've made some changes and really hit our stride, and we've gotten a lot of... It's been, I guess, like a month. It's been 60 days of proudest moments. You know, we've had a lot of good stuff happen lately. We've had like a lot of good feedback, you know, and the numbers have been really good. So Russell and I've been proud lately of the restaurant and what we put together there and kind of what it's producing. And because we didn't have a truck before, we didn't have two restaurants in LA before,
right.
So we were starting from scratch.
Right.
So it's nice to see it locking in.
So what are you doing to promote who you all are?
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, there's so many different ways you can go these days. And when people are starting out thinking about doing a business, mm-hmm. You know, should I hire a PR person? Should I do this? I mean, I've got to get a website. I've got to tap into all that social media and be...
I mean, it can seem sometimes like there's so many things you have to do. I mean, on top of just running the restaurant really
right.
well. And we... You know, it took us 5 months to get a website up, so we've been a little bit behind the eight ball with that stuff. But we've had a lot of good press, and we...
And how did you get that? Did they just happen to find you, or did you reach
some
out?
Some of that happened to find us, yeah, because, you know, we have a pretty visible location.
Right.
And then the market has a PR company, and they would devote a little bit of bandwidth to helping us out, and they devote, you know, they divide up whatever their allotted... paid for time for the month, and they give a little bit to each tenant, and then they do a lot of work for the market as a whole.
And is that something that all of the tenants have to pool?
It's included. It's part of the whole deal. But that was my first exposure to PR, and I thought, this is cool. You know, like, we had an article, and I don't know if it came from our PR company or the market's PR company, but, you know, we had something in the LA Times, the Critics' Choice section. And that brought a lot of people in, and
you're also in Bon Appetit.
Yeah, Bon Appetit. That was part of the market's PR. But we were like, this is good. So we've hired our own PR firm now that works solely on us. We just hired them. They do Handsome Coffees mm-hmm. PR. They do Proprietors LLC. They're called Demota, and it's run by a woman named Diana Bianchini. And we're really excited about her. She's very smart. You should have her on the show. Actually, you like her. You know, sophisticated. Experienced, very intelligent.
Sounds and great. So, I'd love to meet her.
You know, yeah, you guys would like each other. We want to, our goal was to become sort of the definitive Southern California barbecue spot. You know, we have that great location at Grand Central Market. So whether you're a local, you know, downtown resident, you live in Santa Monica, you're from Sweden and you're in LA for 2 weeks, we would like for it to be, is, you know, interest or is sort of
the go-to place.
Yeah, as like much as
one
like
of those
hot
go-to
dogs.
Places yes. that you've got to go to.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but we have like the quality. I feel like that delivers on top of just the space and the idea. And so that's what we've hired her to help us kind of get the message out in that regard. Like, we want to be placed in things with a skillful hand, you know, and we feel like she's the right woman. We're excited, really excited.
Right. No, I think that's great. And coming to that decision, you know, sometimes you realize you can't do it all. You're wearing all the hats, you and your mm-hmm. partner, and then you do have to think about that PR arm and whether you want to take it on yourself or whether.
Yeah. Maybe I'll come back in a year and say it was the worst mistake I ever made in my life. But I have a feeling it's going to be.
Well,
you know,
fortunately,
we're going to be have a lot of benefit from it.
Fortunately, you don't have to sign on for life either. You know, if it's working, it's working, and if it's not, it's not. And
yeah.
And it doesn't always have to. Sometimes it'll pick up steam all on its own, like uh-huh. like it has in the past, and maybe again in the future. You know, so fortunately, it is one of those decisions. But I know a lot.
This is
of,
my first time using PR, but you know, just. In all seriousness, yeah, we're very excited about her. Yeah.
And certainly you've picked someone who has some cachet behind them with, mm-hmm. with the companies that they represent. And
that was a problem. You know, we looked at six different firms and a lot of great people, but we ended up going with one who just sort of got us mm-hmm. and we had a good rapport with, and we sort of felt like our brand and her stable of other clients would fit,
mm-hmm.
you know? So that was a big reason we decided to work with her.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, and I like the fact that you shared what your journey is with choosing her and you know why you did that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be interested to follow that and see how that's working for you. And did you sit down and talk about specific strategies like, okay, let's do a social media campaign or
well, I'd seen with, you
try
know,
and get into different magazines.
I was just like, God, every time I see Handsome Coffee pop up, I think it's just very well placed. It looks good. It's the right positioning. You know, it's the right magazine or blog or this or that. Like, they were in that Bon Appetit article too,
right.
Along with Stumptown, but they had a much bigger space. And so, yeah, we sat down with her, and, you know, one of the things she does is sort of pushes or promotes, I guess, communicates your, at least in the case of our company, is not just a restaurant, but, you know, sort of there's a broad range of stories there. There's the entrepreneurial story, which we're doing here today. You know,
right.
It's not just a food establishment. There's two entrepreneurs behind it. You know, it could be in a design magazine because, you know, we had architects design it and it looks pretty good. You know, it could be on JetBlue magazine because it's there's a travel aspect to it. You know, of course, it's a food place and we'll definitely be, you know, sending that message out that we have great food and we do barbecue. But there's a lot of different ways to look at it. And I think, what did she say? You know, when people start seeing it pop up all over the place, they're like, wow, this is a really interesting, cool spot. You know, it's got a lot of facets to it, and I saw it over here in this magazine, and I saw it over here,
right?
I saw, and you know, in this magazine, definitely, you know, it sort of generates interest.
Right. No, I think that's really important, and entrepreneurs, all entrepreneurs, really, it is about the story, and we do mm-hmm. want to do business with people that we think we know and we like and we trust, and mm-hmm. and knowing your story and what made you decide to do this, you know, to bring the best barbecue to Southern California that you mm-hmm. possibly could and emulate what has made Texas kind of known. I mean, Texas is known for its barbecue.
Yeah, it's really blown up recently. Anthony Bourdain is down there, you know, and Aaron Franklin is in American Express commercials with Nobu, you know?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like people, Austin in general has blown up, but, you know, that whole Central Texas barbecue thing has, a lot more people know about it now.
Well, I've only been to Texas once. I went about 8 years ago, mm-hmm. 9 years ago. And the first thing that everybody said is, and I don't remember the name of the barbecue place. It's kind of out in the country. And
oh, was this in Austin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure you know which one it is without me even saying it. But it's like, oh, my God, you have to go to.
Is it really like kind of a, like a.
Like a real country setting.
Yeah, like kind of romantic a little bit out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can hang out and drink beer.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's the Salt Lick.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. You know, and
great place.
And so I'm sure that, you know, how great to have your name that when people come to L.A. or Southern California, it's like, oh, my gosh, you have to go to Horse Thief Barbecue to get your barbecue and build your brand and create your name. And that's what every entrepreneur needs to be thinking about, is sharing that story and also having that secret sauce, so to speak, of what makes you special and what makes you stand out, and knowing that when you go there, it's consistently going to be this really great barbecue, and that you know, you can always go and get the brisket, or you can go and get the sandwich or the banana pudding or whatever, and just knowing that story behind you. But yes, it is aesthetically very pleasing. It's beautiful. It's a great spot.
Yeah, I think with business, you just trying to do as many things right as possible, and then you sort of hit this critical mass in people's perception.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're just doing your best, because you know you're gonna F up a couple things.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you can't help but that's what helps to make you better too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not all smooth sailing. That's not even possible to have everything out the gate be absolutely perfect, and you have to constantly refine and redirect sometimes, but you focus on what are you doing good. You know, sometimes we tend to get caught up in everything that what are we doing wrong.
Right.
But yeah. Focusing on what are you doing good, because that's what really makes you. So I always like to ask that question of, you know, what are you doing good? And I could say you're serving really good barbecue. Consistently serving really good barbecue.
Mm-hmm. That's what we try to do. You know, serve great food consistently with good service. That's really important. You know,
yeah.
All the people that work for us are warm, friendly people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in a nice space.
And you're clearly communicating that to your employees too, because I've been there when you're there and I've been there when you're not. And I still feel like I'm getting the same great service and the same great food. Right? Good,
oh
right?
Oh my God.
But that's good. I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but you know, there's certain strengths that you obviously have that you're doing that is making this successful. Mm-hmm. And the ones that I'm noticing, you know, that I've noticed since I've known you is you communicate clearly. You know, you're a good communicator. You are very authentic. You know, it is really important. It was you could have just, you know, gotten a recipe. You could have told a story and said, yeah, this is my mother's recipe, you know, that I've had since I was a little boy. My great grandmother who whipped this up.
Found it in a little box buried under an oak tree.
Yeah. You know, but you take what you've got. You're very authentic about, you know, that this was so important to you to have really good quality food, that it's quality beef. You can tell the difference. And whereas most people really may not be able to tell that difference, you can tell the difference. And so that's important to you, and that's what you're serving. So you've got integrity. You've got integrity, and you're a great communicator. What would you say
some of my other qualities are?
Yeah, skill set, qualities, strengths.
I've got both Russell and I have a good palate, I believe. You know, we're very interested in food and the food scene, and we don't just live in a little vacuum. Like, we're constantly eating out, seeing what everybody else is doing, going to every new restaurant, because we love it. It's fun, and it also keeps us informed about what's trending, what's interesting, what are people like getting, you know, curious about, and how are they designing the restaurants, and, you know, what are they cooking, what are on the menu. So we spend too much money and time on that, but it's important to know what else is going on.
Well, that's research.
Yeah, research. It's research. It's a write-off.
Exactly.
We go to all the other barbecue restaurants, you know, just to make, we're not combative. Like, we're definitely, you know, like Bledsoe's and La Brea, those guys are great, and we think they do a great job there. And, you know, I'll eat there. I don't like to eat barbecue that much anymore, but if I do, I'll go there, and I go to other places just to see what else is going on.
Sure, absolutely. You Yeah, and I think that's a real important thing for don't be afraid of your competition. And, mm-hmm. and it doesn't mean you copy your competition, but you want to know of how you're going to stand out.
Yeah, obviously, how you're stacking up. Yeah.
This town will support more than one barbecue place.
Absolutely.
You aim to be the best, but, you know, you that doesn't mean there's not room for everybody.
No
you
way,
know?
Yeah,
you've
absolutely.
Got your own, you've got your own style and your own, and own it. I mm-hmm. think that's a really important piece for entrepreneurs to understand, is own what it is that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And not be so worried about the competition, and which you're not, but sometimes a lot of people are. It's like, oh my gosh, well, somebody's already doing that.
I mean, the main competition is with ourselves. You know, we're trying yeah. to just do the best we can every day. But absolutely, you know, in Austin, there's a whole slew of barbecue restaurants and a ton of successful ones. And even here,
and
you
different.
Know, yeah, they're different in their own way. And that's great, because it'll just make people in LA more, like LA used to, didn't have, it has a great, it's starting to have a really great, like, third wave coffee scene. You know, mm-hmm. some great coffee places here. And that didn't used to be the case. And
right.
that's cool, because it's raised the whole profile and awareness of great coffee in Los Angeles. And maybe that can happen with barbecue too, where, you know, it's just a much more familiar food. And, you know, we're in the conversation as one of the top places in town.
And really paying attention, I think you'll agree with me, mm-hmm. But really paying attention to who your ideal client is, who your client is, who are you selling this barbecue to, you know, who are you trying to attract, you know, to this barbecue place, you know. So those are important things to think about too.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your greatest advice, or what do you wish somebody had told you when you were starting out and thinking about doing this business, or just greatest advice to a
Well, see, my brother sent me this book the other day. It was about, like, mindset and, like, a failure mindset versus sort of this sort of, like, a grayscale mindset, in that, like, failure isn't a stamp of, you know, a sort of lack of validation, or like a stamp that you're a bad person. It's a gauge. And, like, they do these studies with children, and some kids are, like, they want to be challenged. They want to try a harder puzzle and fail. And they get excited about that, because that means that, oh, that shows them that they can learn more, versus other kids who just want to, if they master something, they just want to stay there and they don't want to change it up, because they don't want that feeling of failure. And I think that, you know, that's really important with business, to like, failure, this word is, you know, this terrible thing that if you really get labeled with that. And it's a battle every day. You know, and even I read that classic book, one of those Dale Carnegie books, and they talk
fail
about
fail forward or
something. Yeah, I mean, it's like there's people who've had two or three failures, and then they go on to do $100 million business. You
Absolutely.
Know? So
I could
just enjoy it, you know, yeah. and learn and be creative. It's not supposed to be terrible, and work your ass off, but, you know, chill out at night, go to bed, like. Because I've had to learn how to manage my stress more and not take it so seriously. I mean, take it seriously, but not to the point where you're like hurting your body and your soul. Like, this is supposed to be fun, and it's supposed to be hard work, but, you know, it's all a process. So you just have to come into it with, you know, like a good mindset. Like, it's a journey too. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. when I die, whenever that's going to be, I'm going to look back and it's this process, this growth that I'll be like, man, that was a fun journey. You know, you have to get some perspective, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's a great attitude. And the other thing that I see that you do is, like, you're in a constant learning state, and mm-hmm. you're always open to things. Like you told me, you're taking a wine tasting.
Yeah, and I'm loving that. Yeah, you know, and I'm meeting new people, and I'm having new ideas, new business ideas. So yeah, I think that's really important, to just invest in yourself and learn. And it's pretty cool being a human being, being an entrepreneur,
isn't it?
It's a gift. It really is. If that's what you're into, it really is.
Yeah, yeah. And did you always know when you were little that you wanted to do something on your own? Or
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I never really worked for a company. I think I'm just totally incompetent in that regard and useless to corporate America. So I don't really have a choice. Luckily, I like it.
Good. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show and coming and sharing your entrepreneurial journey with us and what your life is like as an entrepreneur. And if anybody gets the chance to, if you're near downtown, make it a point to stop and come to Horse Thief Barbecue. What's the address?
It's 324 South Hill.
All right. So stop in, say hi to Wade, and enjoy your barbecue.
Mow down.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jen. I got the